Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.17. This is the lightning round of podcasts. We got 3 hockey games and 17 basketball games to cover, so let's get to it. What's up, Ace?
Not much. I'm back in the somewhat colder north.
So are you calling from, is this like a phone or a seance thing? Did things go okay?
Things went well. I am using the phone.
That's Ace, everybody. He's on the phone today for medical reasons. How would you put that?
Yeah, I mean, my mind is okay, and my body is very tired. That's how I'll put that.
You should try being a parent. You shouldn't, because that would be at this juncture. Maybe later. Anyway, this is yeah. Awkward. Welcome back to the MGO Podcast, Ace and Bender. There have been an amazing 3 basketball games since we had our last podcast, despite it being last week. So we thought we would kind of take the Maryland game, take a break, and then talk about the last 2 games, because Rutgers is just Rutgers. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshore Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. So, Maryland. Oh, man, that was... You know, you feel like you're in another universe watching this offense in the first half. Like, what on earth has gone on here? And then It feels less weird a couple games later. But at the time that was happening, it was just like, what has happened to my basketball team? Why did they hire Tommy Amaker again?
Yeah, I mean, that was very much like we just slammed into a wall a couple days after the state game. And it seemed like Bo Wagner was the only one who was able to kind of fight through it and actually produce anything for a while until Jordan Poole kind of exploded for 11, 13 minutes.
Well, I mean, at the time, I kind of felt that was an anomaly because Michigan was getting a lot of shots at the rim, and they just weren't going down. And, like, Maryland was contesting fairly well, but not well enough to reasonably hold Michigan to, like, 0.7 points of possession with 1 turnover. So all the shots kept going up, and a lot of them were at the rim. And I really felt like maybe that would have been a 1 point per possession half instead of what it actually was.
Yeah. No, both Matthews and Simpson, especially, missed some shots that were pretty surprising. And Rockman, too, missed some shots that were quite surprising, given their ability.
Yeah, Rock goes 1 for 7 from 2. Charles Matthews is 3 of 8. Xavier Simpson is 2 of 9. And that's by the end of the game. I assume that was worse at halftime. And so it just kind of felt like, okay, this is the game we lose because it's 2 days after the state game and Jim Delaney scheduled this into an L. But then in the second half, as you mentioned, they just get white hot from 3. They end up leading 59-49 with 5 minutes left, and then they almost come back to blow it. And I mean, it was very appropriate for a Monday night game in the Big Ten 2 days after you played your biggest rival on the road. It was just a complete insanity disguised as a basketball game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of the home game version of the Purdue game that ended with the lobbed GR3, where it's just like, there's no way we should have come out with this one, but happy that it worked out somehow. Requiring a baseball pass and a foul and a couple free throws after Herter nailed that 3. I've seen Michigan run that play before. It doesn't go well. It never goes well.
No, I mean, that was the thing that immediately flashed through my mind when they started running that play. I was like, I've seen this before. Why, it doesn't work. Why are they doing it again?
Like Max Bielfeldt throws it out of bounds. Yeah. I'm not happy. But I guess Livers is a better baseball player.
And also, I mean, Rockman had the presence of mind to know that he had two or three dribbles, and he forces a foul out of Fernando, who is the least likely athlete to not be a soccer player I've ever heard of.
True.
Like, he's...
He's also, like, cartoonishly jacked for a basketball player.
He's, he might be a force, but I kind of feel like he'll just peter out into one of those guys who looks like Tarzan and plays like, I don't know, Nick Ward against Mo Wagner. Boom!
Let's hope so. He's only a freshman.
Yeah, he looked pretty good, but he was not able... I think he was just shocked by the fact that someone was daring to come inside the arc. So he...
Yeah, that was surprising that nobody pulled up, especially with Michigan. You kind of expect that.
Yeah, so he cleans him out and, like, to get a foul with under a second left, I'm like, well, it was 1.2 seconds, but with a second left on the clock, it's got to be absolutely clear it was. And then Rockman cans two free throws while looking like he cares about nothing at all in the world.
Nihilist Rockman is a wonderful new meme that we've got going.
And so you watch this game, and one, Michigan did a great job until real late at locking down Huerter. Anthony Cowan goes 4-6 from three, but I think maybe all of those were unassisted attempts. Like, I can't, and there's only so
much. Yeah, Cowan was doing some stuff that you just got to dip your tap to. That dude can play.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, I mentioned that he's like the Steph Curry generation where they just can pull up from anywhere and it's probably a good idea. But Michigan wasn't letting Huerter do that. He like had an attempt that was almost at half court that I think Poole blocked it.
Yeah, I mean, Huerter goes 2-for-7 from three, and we should note, I mean, I know they're going to let a lot of stuff go late in the game. He got open because there was a bit of a moving screen that freed him up for that go-ahead three.
It was a combination of things. There was a moving screen, and then I think Livers missed the switch. So
yeah, no, there was a missed switch there, but, you know, it was kind of – it was started by, you know, you don't expect a guy to get away with that. But I thought they did that. I mean, I think they did a relatively – good job on defense in this game in terms of, I mean, like you said, they shut down Huerter for the most part. And even with Cowan making the shots that he made, he gets forced into six turnovers. So, I mean, Simpson does a good job of making it tough. I thought he did that.
I mean, the guy goes 4-6 from three and his O rating is barely over 100. Like, the rest of the game for him wasn't particularly good, and the nature of those threes wasn't a breakdown of Michigan's defense, just something that can happen to you on any night. So this game, to me, feels like by the time it's over, it feels like a good game with some inexplicable early two-point shooting. And I feel like my opinion of this team as being a top 20 team, maybe a top 10 team, if a couple of guys continue to improve, doesn't really change very much.
Yeah.
And then the next two games happen. So we're going to take a break. And then talk about those next two games.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.5.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Then Michigan visits the bank, which is just, I mean, Kansas almost lost there, so it's not a totally unintimidating environment.
It can get kind of nightmaresville towards the end there if everything's going right for them.
But this was by far Michigan's worst performance of the season, and it was Michigan's first performance of the season almost from the drop. They fall behind by the 10-minute mark, and they managed 21 points in the first half this time around. And unlike the Maryland game, this felt like absolute dead legs. It felt like nobody could find a shot. You know, Michigan has 6 assists in this game, and I thought that was representative. If you think about Rutgers having 1 assist against Michigan, and Michigan usually having 16, 18 assists in a game, to have 6 assists in a game for Michigan just kind of tells you that the offense has fallen apart and is not running correctly at all.
Yeah, they looked just gone in that game. They just didn't have much. And I mean, credit to Nebraska and to Miles for coming up with the just switch everything. They do have one of those like long, lanky front courts where everybody's kind of like 6'8", 6'9", 230 pounds. That can work against Michigan's front line because Wagner's not an overwhelming physical guy. So Michigan didn't really come up with an answer for that. And with their dead legs, there was not much that they could do after that.
No, and you know, I do think crediting Nebraska is a good idea because I felt like Michigan was taking the ball, and when they attacked the basket, that there was always someone getting their hand in there. And you know, I'm a guy who, in the moment, gets pretty irritated about the refs, but I thought almost everything that they were doing was clean, even live. And Michigan had a ton of live ball turnovers early in this game, which was really bad for them because, you know, this is a team that Nebraska, they rely a lot on getting the line. They rely a lot on their efficient transition offense. And uncharacteristically, I mean, when's the last time Michigan had like a 6-12 assist to turnover ratio in a game? I can't remember. So Nebraska did have a lot to do with that, and I think, you know, the outlook for them is that radically different if they get one more bucket against Kansas.
Yeah.
Then they're 15-6, they're 5-3 in the Big Ten, they have a marquee non-conference victory. We're talking about this team as a tournament team. And, you know, people go into a Nebraska game and it's like, ugh, Nebraska. Remember Nebraska ball? They were bad. And I know that they're not really ranking that high on KenPom, but they have 2 transfers who were their top usage guys. And they kind of look like Michigan this year, where they had a really slow start. You know, they had a couple ugly losses in the non-conference. But, you know, since about December, they've been a good team. And I think they showed that.
Yeah, no, that's a team that's taken a while to gel. But I do like a lot of the pieces on that team. And they do seem to be coming together relatively well. And Isaiah Roby especially is somebody who stepped big in that game. He made a big difference with his ability to switch everything, convert everything near the hoop. They were, especially having to travel out there too, a tough team to run into as kind of the second to last game of the stretch and the last one that didn't involve Rutgers.
Yeah, and the tip's at 9:15, and Beeline says after the game that, like, you know, they got home at, I mean, after the Rutgers game, that they got home from the Nebraska game at like 3 in the morning.
Yeah, that's not ideal. Okay, I have a Nebraska stat about how well they've been playing.
Like, oh, do you?
Using Bart Torvik's site on the T-Rank, he's got that game score stat. And in 5 of their last 6 games, Nebraska's had a game score of at least 80. And 3 of those touched the 90s, and their worst one was a 68.
Could you explain what the game score stat is for our listeners?
It's just like a 0 to 100 score. It's using adjusted offensive and defensive efficiency and Pythagorean win expectancy to just kind of come up with a 0 to 100. Here's how well your team played, given the opponent and whatnot. For example, Michigan scored a 15 against Nebraska.
Yeah.
Which sounds about right. And Nebraska, conversely, put up a 99 against Michigan, which also feels about right, given that situation.
Well, it's tough. It's tough when you
And Nebraska was not scoring nearly that well on a consistent basis earlier this season, and they have gelled since Big Ten play restarted.
Yeah, so it's obviously Michigan's most disappointing outing of the season. On the road in the middle of this four games in 8 days stretch against a team that has improved, you know, disappointing, especially the 20-point margin. And that it does kind of like, I mean, I don't know how much to put on the road. I don't know how much to put on the fact that it's a really long trip. I don't know how much to put on the fact that Nebraska has been very good at home and how much is tiredness and how much is like a real lasting deficiency in Michigan's offense that.
Yeah, I mean, there is something to bring up there. And also, you know, the unexpected Nebraska comes out with something that Michigan hasn't seen yet and hasn't had to deal with. And they will now have to deal with quite a bit going forward, I'm sure.
They did have to deal with the switching against Purdue. So I don't think it came
out. Sure. Well, Purdue was a different type of team. I think it depends on the team. Purdue is a team that Michigan has been able to exploit over the last couple of years because Haas just is not very mobile and neither is their backup. Nebraska's ability to have guys who could stick relatively well with the point guards and wings off the dribble made a huge difference. So when Michigan runs into some of these teams that can field more lanky athletes, that's, I think, where you're going to see that strategy deployed more and where they could run into some trouble.
That's a good point. Isaiah Roby is not Isaac Haas.
Yeah.
So, if Michigan has guys who can pull up in front of Isaac Haas and blow by Isaac Haas, that doesn't necessarily mean that they can do that consistently against a guy like Roby. And because Michigan has absolutely not been able to punish anyone for flipping a 6-foot dude on Wagner inside, like, the thing is, like, didn't they do that against Louisville a couple times? Like, Louisville was desperate. They were doing switch everything. And Michigan was able to dump it down to Wagner, and he was able to go to work on guards to get easy buckets and kind of
was a big reason they won that game. But again, Louisville had a couple big men who were not, I mean, they're more mobile than Isaac Haas, but they weren't basically stretch fours.
Well, I'm just talking about the post-up aspect of it where
that's true. But I think Michigan also used a fair amount of guards attacking in that game. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they try to solve this.
Yeah, I mean, they have to, because you can't have Mo Wagner go through a game with 9% usage. Like, they just can't.
No. And ideally, it would just be dumping down the ball to him and having him post up, but they seem to have trouble even initiating that sometimes.
So that game bleeds into the Rutgers game, and the Rutgers game kind of feels like that for about 10 minutes. And then Rutgers is Rutgers. I just watching this team play was disgusting. I hated it. It was – they had one assist. One assist. Ace, they had one assist.
Yeah, and 13 turnovers. And honestly, that seems like that felt low. It seems like Michigan backed off. It was nice about that.
I remember the assist. It wasn't even a very good assist. It was like a semi-contested three that they got. It was disgusting. So Alex wrote the recap.
And
he called Rutgers the cable subscribers, as is Ben Emgo Blughouse style since they joined the league. And there's a Rutgers like guy who's been on Twitter for a while and like responds to some of our posts from when they relate to Rutgers. And I think he didn't know because he called it like juvenile garbage. And I was like, okay, fair enough. But what about the performance of the Rutgers athletic programs disputes the fact that they are the cable subscribers? What about that? Nothing about it. Nothing at all.
No.
Ugh.
I mean, this is a team that ranks in the 300s in every shooting category.
I absolutely believe that. Remember when that guy like tried to throw it off the backboard to himself?
Yes, I do. And that's their go-to player.
Oh my God.
And it's their highest usage guy.
That's their highest usage guy.
And that went so poorly. I feel kind of bad for Corey Sanders because it seems like he actually has some talent that is just surrounded by guys who are so terrible that everybody can just collapse on him. But everybody else on that team, I those aren't Big Ten players out there.
No, they're not. And I mean, they do have a very legit defense, which helps because Michigan's offense does look sluggish through this one as well.
Pick Isle's a good coach.
With that no talent whatsoever.
Possibly true.
But, you know, Michigan struggles up to maybe get to a point per game, and that's, you know, again, it's like, okay, this is the last of this real long stretch, and is Michigan just excessively tired? I don't know. I kind of feel like the answer to that is no, and we're going to have to dial back our expectations a little bit. Because this week didn't feel like the same team that went toe-to-toe with Purdue when Purdue was shooting 57% from three and walked away with what was eventually a pretty comfortable win at Breslin.
Yeah, I mean, I think this week exposed a pretty significant problem for Michigan right now, which is that they don't really have a guy that they can trust to take the ball off the dribble and get to the basket without turning it over. They don't have, like, Xavier Simpson's their strongest dribbler, and that's a guy that you can't rely on to go amongst the trees and finish against good teams or even necessarily beat, say, a 6'8 guy off the dribble if he gets that instead of a lumbering 7-footer. And then, you know, we saw a number of times this week where Charles Matthews drove into traffic and lost control of the ball. Isaiah Livers tried to create off the dribble a few times and lost the ball. I guess Muhammad Ali Abdulrahman is probably the guy who can best do that. And he just still doesn't seem to be able to consistently step forward and take a more prominent role. I don't necessarily have an explanation for it, but he's not a guy who is constantly using a high number of possessions, even though he's been very efficient this year. So right now, I mean, unless he steps forward, I don't expect Matthews to develop a much tighter handle, and I don't expect Xavier Simpson to grow 3 inches. So I think it's kind of on Rock to take a step forward here and really become a more prominent player, or potentially Jordan Poole to really break out. But I think one of those guys has to take a step forward, unless we get a pretty unlikely, although somewhat hinted at over the course of this week, Jaron Simmons breakout. But I'm not ready to believe in that one quite yet.
No, I mean, he has been getting, I don't know, 10 minutes a game the past few games, and he looks much more comfortable than he did early in the season. Like, he misses two threes against Rutgers, but both of those were kind of in and out. So
yes,
he looks a little bit shocked when the ball comes to him and he gets to like shoot instead of like create his own shots. Like,
yeah.
Oh,
He is surprised that he is in an offense that works as well. That's very apparent.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't want to overreact because I think a lot of teams in the situation Michigan found themselves in would have gotten clunked by Nebraska. But I do kind of like, all right, this team can be like last year's team. We can go into the NCAA tournament and like we're going to beat like a couple teams. We're going to be a Sweet 16 team. We're that good. And I'm kind of like, this feels like a second round of the tournament kind of team now.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. We've felt very similarly after the Ohio State game last year, which seemed to undo a lot of the progress that Michigan made. And that wasn't off a short rest. So we'll see. I mean, Michigan also came back and then thumped Michigan State the next game. So it kind of had a nice narrative reversal there. But
yeah, so instead of doing that, we played Rutgers.
Yeah.
Almost literally. That's
never going to inspire much of anything. So there's not much to read off of that yet. Most teams play clunkers. I mean, we saw Michigan State play a clunker against us, and that's make the Final Four.
We saw Michigan State play a clunker against Rutgers.
Yeah, we also saw that. We sure did see that. We almost lost another conference room.
I would have gladly seen that one shipped out. So
yeah, indeed.
I just want to shout out the various names on the Rutgers roster. They have a Mamadou. I can't do this.
I was wondering how many names.
Candido Sa, and I also like Shaquille Dorson. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Suf Mensa, Jake Dadika, and Matt Bullock. It's not very good. Sorry, Matt.
They're pretty strong top to bottom, with maybe the exception of Matt Bullock.
They're just like a walking sin against basketball.
I mean, maybe that's what they've been recruiting for. This is just, they just look at names.
Yeah.
It would explain something. Maybe that was kind of how they went about things under Eddie Jordan.
My assumption is that everybody they get is a refugee who's never watched D1 basketball. I mean,
and has clearly never watched Rutgers compete in anything.
Right. So they're like, all right, well, this seems okay. They're definitely American, and everything in America is of equal value.
There are teams that wear red that succeed. Presumably this could be one of them.
Right. They just send them tape of some other team wearing red. That
there's a lot to choose from. It's like, oh, here's like this NC State tape. Like they'll figure it out.
So if you're Rutgers, why do you call yourselves NC State? And it's like, no care State. Woo! That's their marketing. It's good.
Yeah, and then the coach throws a basketball at a guy.
Not this guy.
And that's Rutgers.
That was like 3 guys ago, and also their AD.
Yeah.
I really hope this guy who's mad about the cable subscribers doesn't listen to the podcast, because he's not going to be any happier with us.
You might get some emails, or at least one.
Oh, man. Emails. I don't even check my email anymore. Don't email me. Not checking it. If you need to get in contact with me, don't. Let's take a break.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Hi, this is Seth. So one of the things I didn't know when I wasn't a homeowner yet was that icicles are not actually pretty. They are actually a huge loss of energy from your house, or also a problem with your roof getting too much of the heat from your house. Anyway, That's one of the few things that I learned when Ecotelligent came over and looked at my place, and I think you should do the same thing, because it's going to save you a lot of money. Here's what you do. You call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the sources of the issues, their licensed teams will install the fixes, they'll help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call them at 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
So we were going to talk bracketology because it was really fun. And then they lost to Nebraska, and now it's slightly less fun, but we don't have a gimmicky top five. So here it is anyway. What does the bracket matrix say about Michigan at this juncture, Ace?
At this moment, they are the second seven seed, and they're pretty consistently a seven. But at this point, pretty much all the exceptions among the recently updated brackets are anywhere between an 8 and even a couple 10 seeds in there.
That seems highly unlikely, but
the 10 seeds seem a little unfair at the moment. But you know, if somebody watched that Nebraska game and then happened to put together a mock bracket, I wouldn't necessarily blame them for doing that.
So, I mean, Michigan seems like they've almost certainly secured a seed, unless they just completely implode. I think Torvik had Michigan at something like 95%. So we're really talking about seeding. We're not talking about selection at this point. And Bart Torvik has a really nice feature where you can like project the end of your season. And
yes,
if you win all your games, if Michigan wins out the rest of the season, they will enter the conference tournament as ace.
They would be a four seed.
A four seed. Okay.
That would be, that's the absolute ceiling. There is some upward mobility there if they can pull upsets against at Purdue, especially would be the biggest single flip they can really make. And then at home against Ohio State is the other one, just because of the rather remarkable progress that Ohio State has made this year.
So if we dial back from the ludicrously optimistic perspective and say, like, let's say Michigan loses a couple more games, say they're Purdue and they're that Ohio State game. They're 13-5 in the Big Ten. They're 24-7. What do they look like going to the tournament in that scenario?
then they end up as a six seed, which is still, you know, not bad, all things considered.
24-7, 13-5 in the league, and you're a six seed. That's, I mean, the Big Ten is not.
It says a lot about the Big Ten. Yeah.
And the, I mean, the bad part about this is like the Big Ten's bad, but it's not so. They're not like Rutgers bad, right? Like, so you have Northwestern, and Michigan, according to Ken Pom, is 80% to beat Northwestern at home, and they're 59% to beat Northwestern on the road. They go to the Troll Center, and Wisconsin's been a complete firefighter this year. Ken Pom has Michigan as a 55% shot. So
yeah, no, I mean, there are some games that you look at the teams that they're playing against, you think they should win, but that it could be a little bit trickier than you expect. I mean, even Iowa, with the way they play, can randomly go off. Penn State's been frisky a couple times this year. Michigan had to pull their rear ends out of the fire against Maryland. That's the season ender. So, yeah. And they're playing, and that's at their place, even though Maryland had some guys out. They're dangerous.
So, I mean, Michigan is likely to be like a 12-6 team with 23 wins going to the conference tournament, and they might be able to play their way up a seed line, but, you know, you're looking at either they kind of scrape their way to a six seed, I think, or you're looking at one of the teams that gets to play a one or a two in the first round. I mean, in the second.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, currently Torvik has them projected as an eight seed. That's the track they're on. So it will take some other teams falling around them, or them just making a bit of a push at the end of the season and hopefully a run in the conference tournament. That might be the great equalizer here.
Yeah, and we're trying to keep an eye on Michigan's important non-conference opponents. Unfortunately, Texas is stuck in the Big 12, so they're the number 43 team in the country, and Ken Pom projects them to go 8-10 in conference and probably miss the NCAAs. So it's a little bit different world in the Big 12.
Yeah, it's tough sledding out there. And LSU was looking okay for a little bit and has now lost three straight games.
Yeah.
The SEC, so that's not looking good.
And VCU's falling off. Like, Michigan can't get any help from any other wins this year. You know, you see UCLA, which has lost their last three games in the Pac-12 and is now probably headed out of the NCAA tournament themselves. Like, I mean, they have a
Kentucky. And this is really, I mean, if Michigan does end up on the bubble, this is going to be a problem, because this was a year where they already scheduled themselves into a corner.
I don't think anyone with a win at Michigan State that ends up like.
I mean, Rutgers almost did that. We do have to point that out.
Yeah, but
Rutgers really almost did that.
I mean, I'm just talking about from the perspective of the committee, right? Like,
that's true. Does Mark Hollis still run the show? He'd be pretty impressed by that, I assume.
Well, you have to wonder if Mark Hollis is aware of what's going on around him.
That's a very fair point.
So, I mean, Michigan isn't really getting a lot of help from their W's this year, and they don't have a lot of upward mobility except for this game coming up against Purdue, which would be probably a whole seed line by itself if they could pull it off.
Yeah, I think so.
And then you have Ohio State, and you do have Maryland. You know, I think Maryland is probably the team that's been hurt the worst by the fact that the Big Ten is just down, because they're a quality team. Like, in a lot of years, they would have had enough opportunities for resume wins to go get those wins. You know, but they've got a couple. They got Michigan State and Purdue on their schedule, and then they've got us at the end of the year. But that's about it. And they gotta step it up if they're gonna try to make the tournament as the league's fifth team.
Yeah, no, it is a tough break for them, because they're another team that didn't necessarily do a great job of scheduling, and then were absolutely demolished by the way the Big Ten shook out this year.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, you know, I don't think anyone expected that this year was going to be like a peak roster year with a lot of like huge fireworks. And I think people are pretty happy that, you know, they've gotten to the tournament. They have a W over Michigan State. But the wild-eyed optimistic view that I think I was maybe tracking to a little bit earlier in the season has been a little bit deflated, but that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, unless we get a Walton-like breakout from somebody, You know, there's a difference between a Simpson breakout and a Walton breakout, and right now we're at the Simpson breakout stage.
I don't know if we're going to see a Walton breakout for another 20 years. So,
yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. It would take something. The one thing I'm holding on to is the possibility that Jordan Poole just goes supernova. But, you know, I'm also totally in the bag for Jordan Poole. So, yeah. We'll see. I have some optimism that they could still turn into a dangerous team, but But the Nebraska game laid out a blueprint that they might have a tough time overcoming against the type of teams that they'll need to overcome it against again in the tournament.
All right. Well, that's the status right now. We're going to take a break, come back, and we're going to talk some hockey. Thanks, Ace.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis, to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Let's put our heads together, start a new country up. The father's father's father tried to erase the parts you didn't like. Let's try to fill it in. Bank the quarry, river swim. We need skin deep.
Good news, Dave. We forgot to do our Lantana segment when Ace was on the phone, so you have to do it. So
hummus, is it? Or is it, or is it kittens?
Are you serious? You listen to this every week. One, the sponsor wants it. Well, they don't actually want it to be known, but they've tolerated the fact that we tell everybody that there's no kittens in their hummus, unlike some other hummuses that we can't name for legal reasons.
Right, of course.
Possibly an NDA. Possibly because they will sue us for libel. I don't remember.
I don't want that. So,
but it could be an NDA. But it could be libel. But it's probably an NDA, but I can't say that for sure.
So hummus, yes.
Do you have a favorite flavor of Lantana hummus?
A favorite flavor?
Yeah. Would you like some of the lentil, the yellow lentil that's in my fridge as we speak?
I'm actually not surprised it's in your fridge. I'm more of maybe a roast red pepper guy.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too.
A little bit of a kick to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't drink beer, do you?
I don't really know.
So you wouldn't have any beer pairings to go with Lantana hummus, would you?
I personally wouldn't, but I have a feeling that you have multiple.
Beer and hummus, it's a classic combination. You throw it on a burger, the yellow lentil, it's a little spicy, it's a little sweet. Have a Weiss beer, a wheat beer. It's good.
I did check my fridge the other day, and I found the black bean hummus was in there, and I did not personally purchase it. Yeah. So apparently...
I think you have hummus elves?
Either elves or... This Lantana thing is certainly spreading.
Our roommates.
Well, that's probably the
I like hummus
there.
Elves as a concept. We're going to try to work that in against Lantana's best wishes. Anyway, hockey this weekend swept Penn State, which did absolutely nothing for their power rankings, but was required for them to consolidate a big move up last week.
They passed Penn State.
They did pass Penn
which
State.
Which is the one team that they were able to get by.
So, I mean, Michigan is now 12-10-2. And somehow, they're like smack on the bubble, and it's not even that hard to project them to the end of the season to having a bid.
I wouldn't think so, no.
So there's a great site called collegehockeyranked.com that we've been poking at, and they have projections out like, so you know what happens if you win six games or four games or whatever. And if Michigan goes 6-4 in their final 10 games, there's like a 75% chance that they're in the tourney. Barring like apocalyptic auto bid luck.
And this is any six wins?
Well, no.
Okay.
So some wins are more valuable than others. So there's like a version of the six wins where they beat Notre Dame twice and they beat Ohio State twice and then they lose to a bunch of jabronis.
Oh.
And that's actually better for them because you get quality win bonuses for beating good teams.
Right.
So that would be the top end. And then the bottom end is like you lose to Ohio State twice, you lose to Notre Dame twice, and then you sweep the rest of your schedule. And that might be 14 instead of 13.
That, I think, is conceivable for sure.
Well, I think it's tough to expect that a team that's as bouncy as Michigan in the hockey sense, where it's just like they could do anything on any particular night. Like, I think it's a tough ask for them to sweep Wisconsin, sweep Michigan State, and sweep Arizona State. I mean, they've already lost to Michigan State once this year.
Yeah.
Wisconsin is actually... on the bubble themselves, it doesn't look like it.
Yeah, they're on the very, very bottom end.
But they're like 23rd right now, but I looked at their profile. They have 8 games left. They win 5 of them. They're 14th.
Hmm.
So I bet those games are against Michigan, Minnesota, well, yeah. Notre Dame, and
maybe Ohio State. Yeah, so I mean, that's a tough ask for them to do.
It is, but like expecting Michigan like walks into... Well, that's a home series.
It is at home.
Expecting Michigan gets 6 points... out of Wisconsin, which is a top 25 team. So they have a weekend series at Ohio State this weekend. And if they could split that, that would be good.
Yeah, I was thinking winning a tie. If we get a win and a tie down there, take it right now.
Yeah, I mean, because they're 5th or 6th, depending on the way the wind blows right now. It's a road game, so if you get a W, that's 150% what a home W is worth. It's it would be a big, big win. Even if they just split.
And that was kind of the turning point of Michigan's season, I think, because they were looking all right after that Minnesota series back in November, and then they played Ohio State on that horrible weekend.
Yeah, it got clunked.
And, yeah, kind of got run out of their own rink twice by multiple goals, if I remember correctly. And that's what kind of, they end up losing the state a week or two later. And
they lose to Bowling Green at the GLI.
Right.
And you're like, all right,
we,
it's time to pack it in. And then even though they lost both games against Notre Dame, I thought Michigan played them dead even in both those games, and the Corsi numbers tended to agree.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think they actually finished with a higher possession percentage in at least one of the games against Notre Dame. They lost the game on the power play both games. And that's the special teams has kind of been their backbreaker. Ironically, it was not this weekend. They got a goal, I believe, on Saturday, and they did not give up a power play goal now for 2 straight games, which seems like an eternity.
So I was talking with Anthony about this, and Michigan has some real weird outliers. Like their Corsi is vastly improved from last year when we were the worst in the country.
Yes, very much.
They're like 53%. They're a solid top 20, top 15 team. Not great, but much, much better. But their save percentage is terrible, or at least it was before this weekend. They were 57th before this weekend. Their penalty kill is terrible. Their power play is bad.
Yes.
And I mean, what does that add up to? I don't know. I've always felt like save percentage is something that is pretty wobbly, especially in a college hockey season.
There's different things that it could be eventually blamed on.
So, I mean, he was like, I don't know if that those are like bad coaching things. And I was like, I don't know about that. Cause like,
I definitely believe the special teams thing. Like, that seems like things that you're going to run certain set plays, at least on the power play, and there are certain ways to scout and diffuse what other people do on their power play. And this may be a little hot takey, but it seems like you, if you get the puck into the zone on Michigan when you're on the power play, they're very reactive and will let you kind of move it around. And then if they can get a stick on a puck or a shot gets saved, they tend to go after it and try to clear it out pretty quickly. But if you can get it set up, it seems like you're going to have a couple of nice looks at the net.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to my save percentage point, I just looked this up. Hayden Levine is up to 19th in the country with a 9.15 now.
Yeah, well, he's had about, what, six straight games? Maybe that one against Minnesota was off.
I think
off,
he was like a 900 going into this weekend.
Yeah, so he's had...
So he moved up from 56th to 18th in one weekend.
Well, he had quite a weekend.
He did, but this is what I'm trying to say about save percentage. Is like, I think, you know, you can assume that Cale Morris's for Notre Dame is realistic. And helped a great deal by the fact that his team just doesn't give up any chances.
Right.
I think you can say similar things for the guys from like Clarkson and Cornell because they always have that locked-in defensive system.
Right.
I don't know how much of Michigan's save percentage issues this year are just luck, poor goaltending play, or poor defense. I feel like poor defense can't be the answer.
I think it was for a time. I would say that it hasn't been
relative
over the last,
to last
few weeks.
Year, when these guys had good save percentages? I just think that save percentage is such a squirrely stat that I couldn't hang my hat on that no matter what. So, like, I agree that I think that the penalty kill is a real issue. I think I said this last week. I wonder how much time they've really been able to, like, dump into special teams since they're trying to get people to play a system. And there have been coaching guys who probably weren't in much of a system last year because the results are the results.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. From what I've heard, like, Wiseman was the guy who at least ran the power play for the last few years.
We don't know. We think that he was the guy who brought in the umbrella power play. The power play doesn't bother me because I look at the talent on this team and I'm like, okay, yeah, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't expect them to be really good on the power play. Because they, I mean, who's the... I mean, they don't have an elite forward.
No, and
especially, I mean, I like Norris a lot as a two-way guy, but on the power play, he's not an elite forward.
Well, and probably their maybe most talented forward, at least from goal-scoring standpoint, Lockwood is done, so well, he hasn't even been on there.
Yeah, you have Marody, you have...
And he's always been more of an assist guy.
Well, I think Marody is a talented guy, but, like, there's one of them.
Right.
And it's not like you have, like, the Connor,
right,
Comfort.
No, you don't have a Vunderkind.
No. And you don't have a guy who's producing as much as Eric Werenski did. I mean, I think Hughes is just as talented, but I think it's also clear that Hughes is in like a Jack Johnson freshman phase where he's pupating. And if Michigan gets him back next year, he's going to be off the chain, as the kids say, or at least they did 20 years ago.
Is that what you used to say?
No, because I wasn't cool enough to say it back then, but now that it's become something that white people say, I'm down, which they also used to say.
And the 90s are starting to come back, so...
Are they?
Well, supposedly. I was sitting in the box, and apparently one of the games against Wisconsin coming up is 90s night, and I was feeling rather old. But then I sit next to the Daily guys, too, and then the one of them says to me, well, I'm kind of from the late 90s, and I was like, well, now I feel really old.
When he was born?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So... Between those two things, that was...
I'm going to wear all my clothes backwards like crisscross. And people are going to be like, why are you doing that? Arrest that man.
All right.
That's good to know that it doesn't matter if I'm talking to you or Ace. People are just going to stare at me.
Sometimes I really don't have a response. But so the difference in these two games, you know, we talked about the Corsi numbers and such. And I thought the first game, the Friday night game, they played Penn State pretty straight up, and probably by the end of the game maybe had better chances, and they definitely had better numbers.
I thought that aside from the first 10 minutes or so, like, Penn State jumps out to a 9-3 shot advantage, and I think there was a Michigan power play in there too.
Mm-hmm.
I think aside from those first 10 minutes that they clearly won that game.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's nice that they were able to find their feet and they were able to like actually fight back against Penn State's super aggression. I just want to like say that Penn State's hockey program is awesome. Like the way they play is the way I wish all hockey was played. They go balls to the wall 100% of the time. And they, you know, they just started a program and you know they have some struggles and now they're pretty consistently contending to be an at-large bid to the tournament without a whole lot of talent. And I, like, you know, if you can like adapt to the fact that you're not overloaded with talent and still play like really fun hockey, I'm in your corner. So
yeah, and I mean they've been able to go mostly toe to toe with anyone and out, you know, outshoot them and keep the puck and race around. They do have a lot of speed on that team. The defense is a little shaky from time to time, but
yeah, I mean, so the second night Penn State dominates the back half of that game.
Right. Definitely the back half and maybe most of that game.
I mean, I thought like the first half, like you had Michigan with an edge and like house shots. You showed us the Corsi.
Yeah, I mean,
after the first
period. It was like 21-19.
But it didn't look like 6-8 in the house. It looked like everything came on the perimeter in the first period.
Yeah.
And Michigan really dominated the scoring chances. And I thought, you know, through the first 5 or 6 minutes of the second, they had a really great chance at the I forget who had it, but like just a guy in the slot, totally uncontested, and
Warren got in, I think. At
yeah, I think it was Warren. So I'm like, all right, this is going pretty well, like last night. And then I think Penn State flips a switch where it's just like, all right, we got to go get some goals. We got to win this game. And so the rest of the second period, Penn State pins Michigan in by pinching on everything. And whenever Michigan breaks out of the zone, it looks like it's about to be a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-1 or even a breakaway happening.
Right.
And they just can't make it happen because they don't have as much skill as they probably should. And the ice at Yost still sucks.
The other thing is I think the later that the game drew on, and then especially after that third goal, like Michigan just kind of was playing safer. And
I mean, they did turtle. And, you know, with a 3-goal lead, it's somewhat reasonable to turtle, but I think a lot of that was Penn State making it the only viable option for Michigan after a while. I mean, they did win that game because Penn State got caught.
Right.
So they get the breakaway to Rabe. Rabe.
Rabe.
It's Rabe. Yes. It's Rabe's with the S. I'm going to remember that. And he looks like a guy who scores goals all the time instead of no points this year.
We had actually talked about that previously during the game, and then he gets his first point, which ends up being the game winner of all things.
Yeah, so I mean, they did get caught, and Michigan got enough out of their response to get out of there with that game. But you can't feel entirely comfortable with the way that those last 30 minutes played out.
No, it was. I would say that it was somewhat inevitable to an extent just because of the way that Penn State can play, and with, like we talked about, Michigan having a lead might be getting a little more conservative, and then Penn State definitely just put their foot to the throttle and kept the puck in and got chance after chance. The other thing I would like to touch on is I thought that the depth of Michigan's forwards looked better this past weekend or two.
Better, yeah.
The second line, I thought, was probably the best line on at least Saturday in terms of generating stuff in the offensive end. They were the ones that had those odd man rushes, and I think the majority of the goals from the weekend came from that line as well.
I mean, Michigan was able to create off the cycle better than I think they had all year because it's Penn State team. Like, that's been the problem, is they get a rush and maybe they get some offense off of it, but once it's in the corner, they can't. Even if they get the puck free, they can't make anything out of it. And Michigan was able to do that. I thought the Pasyov line was also improved. So now it's both Pasyovs and then Becker, who had two deflection goals in the Friday game.
Correct.
But Becker, he seems like a guy who's going to be like Danks, except maybe a half notch better. I think he's a little bit more skilled, a little bit more agile. And obviously Danks is a senior and Becker's a freshman. But I think he'll get there and be a quality player. I think he's a good player.
Well, and if you pair them with a couple of guys who can skate and have some skill like the Pasyovs, then you can kind of put him in front of the net or put him in those types of situations and let them kind of create. And I mean, this is probably the second or third weekend in a row that we've seen them connect on some nice like 1-2 passes and get some redirects, which again just adds another line. And that's been the thing with Michigan all year, is they've had one great line. And then it's kind of kicking around and waiting for that line to come back out again. And now if they have a decent second line, even without Lockwood, which is kind of surprising.
Then you
add in the pass jobs with Becker. Now you have, you know, 2.5 to 3 lines that you feel relatively confident with them on the ice and are starting to produce on the score sheet as well. Add that to some improved defense and some nice goaltending, and all of a sudden you have a team that, you know, can take out a Notre Dame, or at least put themselves in a position to where if the puck goes in the net that night, they can hold on to that lead and they can continue to drive play.
I think they're meeting, you know, the optimistic expectations where they look a lot better, but they're still a half step down because they're not old yet.
No.
And they're not super talented. So, you know, a lot of NCAA teams get real good by being 24. And a lot of NCAA teams get good by being top 10 picks.
Yeah.
And Michigan has a couple guys like that who are going to be top 10 picks or around thereabouts. They don't really have 24-year-olds. And I think going forward is going to be interesting because Michigan is going to clearly keep going after the top-end guys.
Sure.
But when they bail, as a couple guys have pretty recently, you know, they are adding so many dudes who say they're committed to Michigan that however it falls out, they're going to have a guy on the roster, and he might be 19, he might be 20, but if it's a guy like Becker who you can rely on for 4 years, and then in his fourth year, he's a 24-year-old version of Ben Winnett, 24-year-old version of David Rolfs, then maybe you have a little bit more upside from those guys than you have in the past. So,
and I would even say that Slaker is the ceiling for stuff like that because he was producing a decent amount last year, and he's continued on this year, at least
scoring
some goals, and he's still young.
Yeah,
you know?
he's a sophomore. He's not young, but that's a good point.
Well, I mean,
like, yeah, he's going to be like...
He's not Danks.
No, he's an upperclassman who will be a very good, productive college player who you're not worried about. So it gives your program a little bit of solidity, and then you can swing for the fences with some of your other spots.
Right.
So not out of this world, but I'm fairly content with where hockey's going. I mean, it'd be really nice if they could get that 6-4 and get that bid, and just it'd be weird. They'd be playing an NCAA tournament game. I'd be like, I have no expectations. Win, lose, it'll all be okay. I hope you win, but I'm not gonna go drink afterwards. If you lose, I probably would, but not as despondently.
Yeah, yeah. And this weekend, again, a big weekend. I thought, and Notre Dame kind of exceeded those expectations, but I thought that watching Ohio State play in the end of November, that was the best team I thought Michigan had played at that point. And their defense, I thought, I wasn't sure what Michigan was going to be able to do to generate anything, because anytime anybody got the puck anywhere near the house, their stick was being lifted, or they were being bumped, or they pretty much suffocated whatever Michigan tried to do on offense that game. And so this weekend, if there is an improvement in Michigan's scoring depth or on their defensive end, I think that we had one test last weekend with Penn State where you're going to have to face a high-level Corsi team that's going to shoot a lot, but a team that can be got on the back end. This is a little bit different of a test now, where you have maybe stronger defensive team, but a team that will take advantage of mistakes of you that you make on your back end. So Michigan's scoring depth and their defense will face kind of that next level boss, I think, this weekend.
All right, well, let's hope Michigan can come out of it with at least one win, because that would be a major step towards a tourney.
Agreed. Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm David Nasternak, along with Brian Cook and Ace Anbender via phone call. I can't believe I got out of work to do this. Hooray!